Hello, everyone. I'm John Melke. Welcome to Parkside Today. Our guest today is Tom Krimmel, who recently agreed to expand his role here at UW-Parkside. Last month, Chancellor Debbie Ford announced that Tom had accepted her invitation to take on the responsibilities as Associate Chancellor for University Development and Alumni Relations. For the past couple of years, Tom has been supporting the university as a senior philanthropic advisor. Tom, welcome to Parkside Today.
Thank you, John.
So your connections to Parkside go back to the 1970s. You're a 1972 graduate of UW-Parkside, and from 1979 to 1986, you served as Director of Development and Alumni Relations here at Parkside. How did you first choose to attend Parkside? So how does that story go?
Yeah, so I was actually, I transferred to Parkside. Parkside was just starting a hockey program, a club sport hockey program. And I had attended Michigan Tech expecting to be able to play at that level, which was Division I level. Expecting to play up there was a real stretch for me. So I transferred to Parkside, and it was, you know, I don't say it was totally because of hockey, but certainly it was a huge part of it. Having grown up just east of Parkside, you know, I watched closely the formation of Parkside as I was graduating from high school. But at that point, I was focused on where do I want to try to play hockey.
What were the I've talked to some of the guys that played on that club team, and the, you know, the traveling to just to go to practice, and it sounded like you had to be pretty dedicated if you were going to be part of that hockey or that club hockey team.
You did, and you had to you know, in part pay your own way. We had a number of fundraising adventures and sold sponsorship in the program, and also provided, you know, reasons for people to go to the game to increase ticket sales. And all those promotional ideas gave us a fairly balanced budget. But at the end of the year, many times we had to chip in to make ends meet. So it was a dedicated group for sure. We practiced in Milwaukee. We played in Milwaukee at Wilson Park. It was probably, you know, 40 minutes from campus or something. And our practice time was like from 10 p.m. to midnight because the ice was cheaper after 9 p.m. or something,
9 p.m.
you know. And so, but having grown up playing hockey in the Kenosha area, we were used to odd hours. I in high school, I played in a league in Chicago at the Rainbow Arena, and our ice time on Friday night was 2 a.m. on Saturday morning.
Holy cow.
You can imagine how dedicated my parents were at that time, taking me down there in the middle of the night.
Right, right. And what position did you play on the team?
I played center.
Okay. Well, it's the start of a new university, and recently we had Malcolm Mahone and Roddy Dmitrijevic and Bill Sabansky on to talk about their experiences as members of the basketball team. And, you know, I was interested in how they chose Parkside as a new program, and it was about relationships, right? Where Malcolm was being coached by Dick Versace at St. Joe's, who knew some people in Chicago, who knew Bill Sabansky, and that relationship part is so important in almost any endeavor in life.
Sure, as a startup university, we were all, you know, taking a risk that this would be a good choice for us, and I think everybody would agree from my era that it was an excellent choice. Were they still playing basketball at Tremper when they were here, or was the,
you know,
Sports and Activity Center open?
It was not for a while.
Okay.
Because and I've told the story too many times of being an intern at the Journal Times in high school. So now this is like the spring of 72, and the sports editor would not. I wanted to cover Parkside. I said, I want to go to a Parkside game because Chuck Chambliss, now Jamil Gwari, was playing on the Parkside team, and the game was at Memorial Hall in Racine. So they were playing there. I believe they played at Case. They may have played at, you know, may have played
at Tremper, I remember, at Tremper too.
Yeah.
Kenosha.
Yeah. Number of places until they got the DeSimone Gymnasium going.
So I remember one day it was a winter day, and because I was real active in the athletic program. Vic Godfrey, who was the coordinator of club sports and also the cross country coach, called me and said, "Hey, the Ranger Bear is sick. Can you be the Ranger Bear tonight? We're playing basketball at Tremper." And I said, "Of course, sure." So I it was an old farmhouse that was the athletic office, got the Ranger Bear suit. And I had an old Opel GT, you know, real small two-seater.
Right? Yeah.
I put the bear suit on without the head.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was driving down to Tremper. And so I was 21 at the time and stopped at a bar on 22nd Avenue in Kenosha. I think it was Midtown, I think was the name of the bar.
Oh.
I had to walk in with this bear costume, right?
Sure.
So I put the head on, walked in, you know. One guy that was probably there a little bit too long, I sat next to him, and he did a triple take, you know. And then I had to, you remember the Hams Bear?
Yeah.
So I had to order a ham.
So, sure, yeah, sure. So yeah.
That was the one time I was the Ranger Bear for Parkside.
And that's, you know, everybody should be a mascot because it you know, you feel differently, don't you? You get in there and you realize nobody knows who it is. So
you do things that you wouldn't normally do.
You do things you wouldn't normally do.
Hopefully live to tell about it, right?
Yeah. Right. So when you graduate from Parkside in 72 and you come back just a few years later as development director, what were some of the bigger challenges for a development director with a new university?
Yeah, that's a good question, because everything was really a challenge in terms of fundraising. At that point in time, people didn't have a good understanding of why private support was required for universities like Parkside. So it was a part of an educational process and finding projects that they would be interested in funding.
Mm-hmm.
So it was an alignment of what their interests were and what we needed. You know, scholarships were, and still are, something that's fairly easy to communicate to people, that people need help in going to school, and rather than work three jobs, they can only work two jobs,
yeah,
you know, and
right,
go to school.
Right.
So scholarships was one of the important things. And we had this vision at that time of trying to bring campus housing to Parkside.
Mm-hmm.
Alan Guskin was the chancellor. And so we contracted with a fundraising firm in Chicago to study the feasibility. Could we raise enough money to provide student housing at Parkside? And the study came back with a negative finding. In other words, they felt, the people interviewed in the community felt, that this is something that should be built with state funds, and students should pay rent that would cover the cost. You know, but the state was not building any additional housing units because there were empty residence halls at other universities at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't help us. We couldn't move the empty resident hall from Whitewater to Kenosha. So, so that wasn't a fundraising project, but it turned into a project that created the UW Foundation, UW Parkside Foundation, because ultimately the state agreed to give 18 acres of campus land to the foundation for the purpose of building campus housing. And then the foundation raised money through a bond issue to generate the money for the construction and a small operating reserve. And so that's how the first housing came about, was from a feasibility study that said we couldn't raise the money, to finding another way around that barrier and creating the foundation.
Sure.
You know, and initially I was hired, John, as the alumni relations coordinator. And then development was added probably 2 years later, probably in 81 or so. But the early work that I did was around alumni relations and trying to build the connection with alumni through getting them re-involved with the campus.
Mm-hmm.
And I look forward to that part of my new job as well, building that stronger bond with alumni and building more alumni pride in Parkside. There's so many good things that have happened over the first 50 years that we need to make sure that that story is told to our alumni, and our alumni have the opportunity to talk about those great things with other people they meet. I was just on the phone this morning with somebody, Jim Kramer, who graduated from Parkside, and he's in Phoenix, in Scottsdale, Phoenix area, and he was wearing some Parkside gear the other day, and somebody came up to him from northern Wisconsin and started chatting up about Parkside. So,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Being proud of it, wearing the Parkside gear is a real important thing that alumni can do.
Sure, sure. Before you came back to the university to assist as a philanthropic advisor, I know you, you mentored actually two of my ex-bosses. First, Lenny Claver and John Jaroszewski. What was it like to view the university kind of from the outside? You know, because I know you still stayed connected, but you're doing your other career responsibilities and goals. What was it like to watch Parkside?
So I was watching from a distance because I was primarily in Massachusetts for the last 26 years of my career. And so I wasn't really that strongly connected. I would come back to Kenosha and Racine to see family and things, but wasn't that strongly connected until we moved back in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
Then I was able to get more directly connected. But, you know, Parkside, I stayed watchful of the athletic program.
Mm-hmm.
My good friend and college roommate Rick Kelps was a soccer coach, so
sure.
Occasionally they would make an East Coast trip and we would have a dinner for the soccer team, Rick was my conduit to Parkside information.
Sure.
And so I stayed in touch with a few alumni, and they were helpful in terms of, you know, providing me with updates that they knew about at Parkside, but I didn't feel that connected to Parkside when I was out of the area.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you come back to the area. What was the motivation, the connection to say, okay, now I am going to reconnect with the university?
Well, I guess it had always been something that I wanted to do more of, connecting to Parkside.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, I had other responsibilities. I was working for other universities and colleges. And so my time in higher education was kind of in my career, and I didn't have a lot of extra time. But when I retired from full-time employment, I did have more time. And then we decided to move back to the area, and I was able to, you know, reconnect. I had connected many times with Chancellor Ford and thought she was doing a great job in moving the university forward. And of course, as you mentioned, John Jaroszewski was the assistant chancellor at that point, and mm-hmm. I had been coaching him and Lenny Claver before that in just a very part-time way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How has, during your career, how has college and university development changed? It must have changed in over time, and or maybe it hasn't, but if it has, how has it changed?
So I think it's changed more so in the public sector.
Mm-hmm.
As I mentioned earlier, you know, giving to public institutions was not the norm 30 years ago, 40
right.
years ago.
Right.
And the pie chart of revenue for public universities was much different than it is today. Today, philanthropy makes up a huge part of, you know, the revenue mix of major universities, and state support is much, much less. So, in part, private support has allowed universities to do the extra things that they could not do with state support.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, with private institutions, philanthropy has been critical to their existence forever, right?
Right. Right.
So they have a long history of philanthropy and a long history of alumni support.
Mm-hmm.
But that history isn't there with public institutions, and that's changed over the years to where now I think most alumni of public institutions understand that they can make a difference.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right, right. As Parkside is, you know, we're in the midst of a 50-year celebration, and I also wonder if, you know, as a person who was going to Park High School in 1972, I think the last thing I ever thought I'd be doing is doing a radio program at Parkside during its 50 years celebration. But you never know what life is going to throw at you, right? So what are some of the key opportunities and challenges that you see for the university? Here we are in our 50-year celebration, looking forward to starting the next 50 years of the Parkside legacy.
Well, I think, you know, clearly providing more student financial aid, more scholarships to students so that students can participate in campus activities and participate in working with faculty on their research. To me, that's the most obvious challenge going forward is to give students the resources that they need to fully participate in college life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it used to be, well, when I was in school, probably you too, John, that a summer job, a good summer job,
right,
could cover most of your college expenses.
Yeah.
And that isn't the case today. At least not many summer jobs that I know can cover the expense of going to school. So most of our students at Parkside work at least one job,
mm-hmm.
some multiple jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think being able to relieve that financial pressure a little bit and also avoid student loan debt.
Mm. Right.
You know,
right.
Because students often have the job and then they take out student loans. So when they graduate, they're indebted. I think the average is over $20,000 that
mm-hmm.
Student debt, which is a huge, I mean, our first house was $16,000, right? So student debt on average is now more than our first house was.
Right.
So trying to find ways to have alumni and community friends and corporations support our students financially,
mm-hmm.
I think is the biggest challenge going forward. And that will increase our graduation numbers, which I know the community is very interested in having more college graduates, well-trained, right, as they would be at Parkside,
right,
to enter the workforce. And so I think that the impact on the community will be significant if we can find ways to get students through Parkside in higher percentages and through Parkside a little bit quicker because they don't have to work quite as much.
Right. What is it about a college or university from a development director position that you see that motivates people to connect and want to support the institution or support the student success part of the institution?
Well, I think, you know, connecting with people is really the most important ingredient. It's nice to have, and, you know, you're in communication, so I will need your publications to do this, but, you know, seeing it in print or even in video isn't as good as connecting with people individually, you know, in small groups or in one-on-one situations.
Mm-hmm.
So having the opportunity for people in the community to connect with students who are receiving their financial support or the financial support of others and understanding from the student's perspective what it means to them is a really important way to get the message out. Something like the Thompson Fellowship, where students are paid to work with a faculty member on the faculty member's research,
mm-hmm.
Is a really easy way for, I think, community members to get an idea of what their financial support of students can lead to, not just that they would have to work less off campus, but also that they would have this meaningful experience in working in research as an undergraduate student,
mm-hmm.
which is not unusual at Parkside, but it is unusual in most public institutions to have that type of opportunity as an undergraduate student. So giving the people in the community, the prospective donors, the alumni, the chance to understand where their money is going and how it's impacting people, how it's impacting students, how it's impacting faculty.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In your conversations with people in the community and the time that you've been back in the Kenosha area, what do you hear, or what do you see as the perception of the community with regard to Parkside and also the opportunity to support student success?
I think in general, people have a pretty good understanding of Parkside in the community, but they don't understand the way that they can help students be successful.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they see Parkside in the community through our community activities. There's many events at Parkside. Athletics is always in the press. So they're aware of Parkside, but they're not aware of how they could be helpful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's probably the case in every university like Parkside, which is based in an urban area, that people don't think about the role they could play. And I don't believe that people have a deep understanding of the impact Parkside has had on this, on these communities, Racine and Kenosha.
Mm-hmm. And the impact of 25,000 plus graduates and 60-ish percent that stay in the area, and the pre-med, the pre-health program, really difficult to go almost anywhere in either the Racine or Kenosha communities and not run into someone who has a connection to Parkside, right?
Right. And that that point was brought up in my conference call this morning about, you know, people who went to Parkside need to make sure that people in the community know they went to Parkside, right?
Right. Right.
One of the people on the call runs an accounting firm in Kenosha, and she has 36 employees, and half of them are Parkside graduates.
Oh, my goodness.
But, you know, she didn't know that until she did a little survey,
right,
and found out, my goodness, that's, you know, Parkside is really having an impact on my firm. I'm able to hire talented people right here locally.
Right, right. Yeah.
So it's up to us as a university to make sure alumni are proud of the university and to remind them that they need to show that pride and help us to better show the impact that Parkside is having on our communities.
Right. So you're away from the Kenosha community for a number of years. You're back, and I'm saying Kenosha community, but really looking at southeastern Wisconsin as more of a region. What are the things that maybe have surprised you since you've been back, or things where you thought, oh yeah, well that's kind of as I remember them?
Well, I guess, you know, the surprise to probably everybody is the change in the economy. You know, the economic drivers are no longer the big companies, but a lot of smaller companies. You know, obviously, you know, American Motors has been gone a long time, but you know, their leaving has helped diversify the economic base in both communities. And of course, Foxconn coming in with unknown impact at this point, but certainly a lot of impact on job creation in the community and supplier job creation. So, you know, I was talking with one of our graduates in California recently, and he was not aware of the Foxconn situation. Mm-hmm. So I sent him a newspaper article on it, and, you know, he was just astonished to find out, you know, what the potential is,
right,
in basically in his home region with just one major employer like this. So I think the economic development and the diversity of the economic development have surprised me. You know, the lakefront development in Kenosha around the harbor,
mm-hmm,
is something that I've kept a watch on, but that's, you know, that's also a big change from what was here before. Right?
Sure. Yeah, for sure. For sure. What, when Tom Kremel isn't trying to raise opportunities for more student success, what does Tom Kremel like to do when he can kind of just step aside from development director?
Sure. So in the winter, I curl. I'm a member of the Milwaukee Curling Club. And so I do that two or three times a week in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
In the summer, I'm part of the Master Gardener program at the University of Wisconsin Extension.
Okay.
So we help people in the community with their gardening questions and issues and try to be a resource for them to link into the UW Extension's vast resources of information and expertise.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously I like gardening. I like to work around the yard.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to ride bicycle riding in the summer.
Yeah.
Not so much the last few days.
No,
but,
no.
In the summer, we live close to the bike path in Ozaukee County. And so I have ready access to, I can, you know, go up to Port Washington or all the way down to downtown Milwaukee.
Yeah, right.
On bike paths. So enjoy right. that very much. We have five granddaughters, three of whom live in the Milwaukee area.
And oh, that's
two
nice.
Of whom live in California. So we, by moving from Massachusetts to Wisconsin, we reduced our travel a bit.
Cut down the plane ride a bit.
Yeah, spending time with the granddaughters is also good. I could go on about my external activities, but I've told the chancellor that, of course, my number one activity for the next couple of years anyway is going to be Parkside. But
sure.
I do have a lot of things that could be keeping me busy.
Sure. So I don't want to go back to curling a bit, because I did attempt curling one winter, and I didn't do really well at it. You know, I think it's probably coordination. But the part that struck me about the game that I didn't see just watching on television was it's like a chess match on ice, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Very strategic shot making.
Yeah.
You know, you just think, well, I have to throw the rock so that it ends up in the center of the circle, right?
That was my probably problem.
Right. And in my match last night, for example, you know, there were quite a few rocks that ended up in the center of the circle early.
Yeah.
But then somebody comes along and takes them out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you don't want to put it in the center. You want to hide it behind other rocks, right?
Sure. Sure.
So, yeah, there's a lot of strategy, and, you know, sometimes you make the wrong choice on strategy, right? And your opponent is very happy to see that you didn't see this option that they have now.
Right.
Much like a chess move, as
right.
you said.
Yeah.
Where you made what you thought was the right shot, and you're very proud of the shot you made, but you didn't see the opportunity, the opening that you left your opponent.
Right. And it... having tried it a little bit, it gave me the perspective of watching it on television. You know, a lot of sports you watch on television and it's like, okay, here's, you know, did he make that shot or did he do this? But I think someone who's participated in curling, if you watch the game, now you really get to second guess why did somebody do this or that or make this particular
right,
shot?
Right. And, you know, some of the shots they make on television are way beyond my level of curling. So I'm amazed at the things they even try to do on television, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And sometimes, frankly, I don't understand why they did it the way they made the shot the way they did. Until afterwards, and I see, I would have never even seen that opportunity, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm not an advanced curler. I just do it recreationally, but it's a fun game. And then, of course, after each match, you have to socialize with your opponents, which is the best part of my game, actually, is after
sure.
the match.
Sure, yeah. I was also surprised that it was pretty, I don't want to say intense, but the competition was serious.
Yeah.
More so than just, oh, we'll go out and, you know, throw some rocks around. That it gets pretty, the competition is at a high level, isn't it?
Yeah, when you're on the ice, it's very competitive, very competitive. Of course, there are leagues that are, you know, much more recreational and beginner leagues that we have at our club now that allow people to get into the game in a very non-threatening way.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, after the most recent Olympics, there was a huge spike in people that wanted to learn how to curl.
Right. Right. Well, our guest today has been the time always, I always say the time goes by really quickly on this show. And it has again, Tom Krimmel, Associate Chancellor for University and Development and Alumni Relations here at UW Parkside, has been our guest. We've talked about hockey, we've talked about curling, we've talked about student success, And Tom, all the best in your expanded role, and thank you for being on Parkside today.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed it too, John.